The Get This podcast is brought to you by ProPhotoGo.com, professional photography on demand. Use coupon code GETTHIS to get 10% off your professional photo session. So whether you need new headshots, or you have a big event coming up, an engagement, a wedding, you name it, or let's say you just want new photos so you can look snazzy on social media, ProPhotoGo is professional photography on demand. Use coupon code GETTHIS and get 10% off. Go to ProPhotoGo.com. The Get This podcast is also brought to you by WP Engine, the best WordPress hosting available. People who know me know I build enterprise-level WordPress websites that reach millions of people a year. And it's important that those sites live at a host that is secure, fast, and offers the kind of support you need 24/7. And I can't recommend WP Engine enough. I use them exclusively and recommend them to all of my clients. Get 10% off your first year of exceptional hosting for your WordPress website. Go to getthispodcast.com/WordPress, and that will trigger the 10% off coupon. Again, it's getthispodcast.com/WordPress. Hey everybody, this is Kevin Couchman with the podcast Get This, a show about things people love. It's August 6th in the foul year of our Lord 2019, and we are coming to you from the Heights, Washington Heights, in the beautiful city of Manhattan. And I'm joined today by my amigo, the only one.
Jose Ignacio Gomez, the one and only.
The one and only. And we have a guest we're very excited about. A fellow here who lives in the neighborhood by the name of Jake Chapman. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good.
All right, man. Yeah. And Jake has a lot of cool things going on. He's going to tell us about them. And what's the thing that that we love that we're going to talk about today, Jake?
Sure. Well, I love music in general, but specifically, I'm a vibraphonist, among other things. But,
can I pronounce it vibraphonist?
You may.
Yeah,
maybe it might be good with an accent as well. The brophonist or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah.
But you may.
Yeah, but
vibraphonist.
Say it one more time for me.
Yeah.
Vibraphonist.
Vibraphonist.
Yeah, man. The instrument's a vibraphone. I should probably explain what that is.
Yeah.
So most people have heard of a xylophone, right? And
right.
When you say xylophone, people think of a toy instrument probably, but in actuality, a real xylophone is actually this pretty big wooden barred instrument that you play standing up. And they're a family of instruments like the xylophone, including the marimba, which is another wooden instrument, and the vibraphone, which is an instrument with metal bars. And that's an instrument that I've been playing since I was in middle school. And I came from it. I came to it from the piano. So I've been playing piano for about 6 years. Then I picked up the vibraphone. And I've been playing ever since. So this whole family of instruments are—it's just under the whole header of mallet percussion, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, vibraphone, marimba are all instruments that I have. I also have steel pan. I have glockenspiel, which is another one that people have heard of, and that's one with little bars. That's kind of like the xylophone that people think of. It's actually called a glockenspiel.
And that one's
very high-pitched, small bars, very shrill, harsh sound.
Yeah. Oh, geez, you're really selling it.
Yeah, really. But that's a very new instrument to me. I actually picked one up for the first time back in May, and I got another one about a month later. And I've been going around the city playing a glockenspiel, going to a few jam sessions, really exploring the instrument, which I think... As rare as vibraphone is in jazz, it's extremely more uncommon to see a glockenspiel. Like, I have never heard of jazz glockenspiel. I was trying to find stuff online.
wait. How many minutes are we in timestamp? We're only 3 minutes in and we already have a show title. Jazz glockenspiel. That's a great episode title.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Record. That's a record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's maybe the fastest somebody's hit a show title.
It was so fast awesome. And I'm still like, did this happen right
I'm
now?
I'm reeling. I'm in shock.
I'm processing right now.
It's a great phrase, and you know I'm always saying, you know, I brought my Glock, or don't mess with me.
Oh,
I have my Glock,
man.
And
and
so I've taken the first glockenspiel I got, which is a really another great thing about the glockenspiel is that it's very light, and so I don't even need a cart to bring it around. It just packs up into a case, and I have a stand, and I can just carry it in my hands or on my backpack or in my backpack. So. I've brought it to jam sessions at the Keep, which is there's a fantastic hot jazz, gypsy jazz jam session there, and that's in Ridgewood.
I've
brought it to Mona's, which is this another jam session in the same vein in the East Village that's been going on for years now, and I've also brought it to a rooftop jam in Ridgewood as well. That was on July 4th. That was fantastic. And a couple other places as well. And I'm really excited to actually debut it in performance next week at Dizzy's.
That's it. So you were reading my mind. Tell us what you have going on next week. And again, it's August 6th, 2019. I'll attempt to put this thing out the same day, if not the next day. So what do you have going on next week at Dizzy's?
Sure, yeah. So I will be leading my own group from Tuesday the 13th through Saturday the 17th. Anyway, it's for the late set, which is at 11:30 every night. And I'll be playing mostly vibraphone. But I'll also get in some marimba, some piano, and some Glock. So I'm really excited to play all those instruments. I'll be playing a lot of my own music, which I've been arranging and writing, mostly arranging and practicing for the last few weeks now, and a few standards as well. And I'm just really excited to play in such a great venue in New York City.
Yeah. So it's going to be 11:30. How many gigs?
It's 5 nights in a row, starting Tuesday.
Nights.
Yeah.
Tuesday, do you have the date?
Yeah, the 13th.
Oh, the 13th. Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah, I just want to hear it repeated.
Yeah, August 13th.
How many sets you get to play?
It's one set a night, and it's going to be about an hour each night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I actually am playing with two different groups. I assembled two different groups of people. The first three nights, I have guitar, bass, drums, three amazing musicians. And the last two nights, I have piano, bass, drums. And on the last night, I even have a lot of special guests joining me, including... And this is going to be very exciting, including my whole family. My whole family, right? I come from a family of musicians. They all live in LA, and that's where I'm from. But they're going to be in town for the gigs, for the last two gigs at least. And I thought this would be a great opportunity for us to perform together, because that's something we've been doing on occasion since 2007. But what's really exciting is that this December, we're going to China on tour. We're going to 20 cities performing in China. I've never been to China, and I've never even been on a major tour, and I get to do my first one with my whole family. It's going to be pretty exciting. So I figured, you know, we're actually going to be performing in LA right before we leave, which we've done already, actually. But in New York, we've never performed as a family, and I thought, hey, this would be a great opportunity for me to showcase the family. And
when you say the whole family, what exactly do you mean?
So
do you
mean
the extended family?
No, I mean my nuclear. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. So my mom is a singer. Mm-hmm. My sister is also a singer. She plays some piano too, but in the group, she'll just sing. My dad plays piano, and I'll be on vibraphone. Yeah.
Wow. Unreal.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Man. So before we proceed to unpack this and reverse engineer how you got to play the jazz glockenspiel at all these cool places in New York, I want to find out more about where people can find you, because it's a very cool thing.
Absolutely.
So for the thing at Dizzy's, where do people go?
So you can go online to the Dizzy's website.
Sure.
I'm really based on Instagram these days.
Gotcha.
Right. And my handle is Chappy Milkshake. CHAPPY okay. Milkshake.
Chappy Milkshake. Yep. Yeah.
And
I'll never forget it.
Yeah, you won't.
I'll never unsee that.
No, you won't. Yeah. I'm also, you know, I have a Facebook page, but it's basically whatever I post on Instagram goes to Facebook.
Gotcha.
And I'm
also
doing the same.
I have some stuff on YouTube as well, but really where I've been focused over the last year and a half has been Instagram.
Okay, and people will be able to find everything else through that.
But I would say just, you know, go to the Dizzy's website, or sure. It's as simple as just showing up at 11:15. You know, Tuesday through Saturday.
Well, I'm gonna make a plan.
Yeah.
And what's the night with your folks? Is that the 18th?
That's the 17th. The last the 17th. The Saturday. Yeah, the 18th. That's the 17th.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. The 17th. Yeah. Okay. All right. That might be the one to go to. I got a birthday coming up.
That one.
So somebody owes me something.
That one's essentially going to be a huge party, kind of like Jake Chapman and friends. Like, I'll open up the night with one, maybe two numbers, and then start calling up people to play with me. And
I'm gonna
feature my friend Jasper Dutz, and we have our duo together called Champion Milkshake, and we play a whole range of things, from jazz, musical theater, to Disney music, video game music, Harry Potter theme.
Oh yeah,
and
you were
this is our busking. We do a lot of busking together. In fact, we just got into the music, the MTA's music under music. What's it called? MTA Music Under New York program, which if you've ever been in the subway system and you've seen people playing with the pink banner behind them, they're part of that program.
Gotcha.
So we can start reserving these spots to busk, and we're excited about that.
Wow. No idea.
Yeah. Yep. So we, our duo, I'm on vibe, sometimes marimba, he's on sax and clarinet. And then I'm also going to play a video game music song. I'm going to call up a vocalist, the one who runs the session at the Keep that I was talking about. She's going to sing a tune with us. And
a video game tune?
No. We're going to sing a jazz tune.
Okay, jazz tune.
But the video game tune is going to be with Jasper and my other friend Max Boyko. And that's basically the main three kinds of music that I've been playing over the last year have been jazz. That's probably the primary one. R&B, hip-hop kind of stuff, and then video game music.
I wonder if the MTA would accept podcasters underneath, right? Like, we could just busk. We could just sit and do a podcast in the subway.
It
would sound incredible, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the amount of noise reduction I'd have to do to that?
Yeah.
It would just sound like... it'd be unlistenable. Yeah. Well, which there may be a niche for that.
There may be.
Yeah. Well... Man, you got so much going on. It's tremendous.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
thank you.
I still got. I'm way slower than you guys are, but I just got a question. What makes you change from one instrument to the other? What attracts you from the vibraphone that other many other instruments didn't have?
Well, that's a good question. So it wasn't an instrument that I actually picked. I would say, you know, I had been playing piano, like I said, for about 6 years. And then in middle school, I auditioned for the jazz band on piano. But there were three other pianists who auditioned as well. And since I had already been playing percussion in the concert band and in percussion ensemble, my jazz director asked if I wanted to play vibes in jazz band. And, you know, I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
All right.
And, you know, it was fun and I liked it. So I kept going and I've been playing for... about 13 years now. And so that's how it happens. Yeah. Yeah.
And you were really connected to it just like that in that moment?
I mean, it's a fun instrument, you know, and yeah, I was, you know, I think it took time for me to develop a connection, probably a few years until I considered it my primary instrument, because actually during middle school, I started teaching myself guitar and that was the instrument I focused on the most, especially during 6th, 7th, 8th, maybe 9th grade as well. And that's the instrument that I was practicing the most out of piano, vibes, and guitar, was really guitar. But then something happened, I want to say after my sophomore year, or maybe during my sophomore year of high school, and I really started focusing on jazz and the vibes more.
All right.
And then, you know, always had piano still under my belt, and I would start working on jazz piano. And pretty much from then on, my two main instruments were vibes and piano.
Vibes and piano.
Vibes and piano.
And I bet you had a lot of support from your family, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky, you know, to I've never not had support from my parents. They've been very, very helpful and supportive of me and pretty much open to whatever I want to do. You know, my dad got me my first vibraphone for my 13th birthday. They also got me a professional Musser vibraphone, excuse me, for when I was in 11th grade. So they've been very, very helpful. And what else can I say? I forgot what I was going to say.
That's all right.
So
and you play, I imagine you play together.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Of course we know you do. You're getting ready to tour China in the summer, right?
Amazing. I mean, there was, you know, when I was in LA, whenever I am in LA, there's always music going on in the house. Like my mom's a vocal coach, voice teacher. So growing up, I basically heard, you know, people coming over, taking lessons all the time.
What type of music does she coach?
She coaches musical theater, pop, you know, but I said mostly in musical theater. Gotcha. She's also a musical theater director.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Does she do that around LA?
Yeah, in LA.
Oh, fun.
She taught it at a couple colleges.
Great.
In addition to having a cabaret duo with my dad.
Oh, nice.
So they also perform.
This is so romantic and wonderful. I'm just staring into the abyss of my own family dysfunction here. This is it's actually a nightmare. You know what? This podcast is over. I'm done.
Yeah, I know.
I think we got more time.
We gotta
make the hour. And stuff,
right? Well, we gotta make the hour. Yeah, I'm stuck. Okay, all right. Well,
Jake, keep talking. Jake says he was a little. Talk in an hour? Yeah, I never talked that much.
I've never interviewed anyone so well adjusted. We've never had anybody. No.
Does anyone ever say you look like Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, you look like Jesus.
Oh well, I've got that.
You look like Jesus with a and you're wearing. I love the shirt you're wearing. Let me describe it.
Yeah, sure.
It's Mario before I think he levels up with shrooms, but he's got a little weed leaf on.
Yeah. Wait a second. Jake plays the vibes, but this motherfucker looks like a rock and roll star.
He does. And Mario. Yeah, it says really. Weed, but it's WIID weed. Yeah, fantastic shirt.
Great shirt, yeah.
Fantastic.
And so to continue, though, so my mom, you know, I always heard her giving voice lessons. And
wow, you really stay on track, man. That's good.
I had more to say. You know, my dad would be, you know, practicing or writing a tune, or they'd be playing together, or I'd be playing with my dad. And, you know, there were many a dinner party where after the dinner we'd you know, have to give a performance.
That's really wonderful.
You know?
Yeah.
And then my sister also would write songs on the piano. So like, we often there was some, you know, fighting for piano time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's wonderful. You know, it's been a while since I've really heard of or even thought about a family that's really that musical. It's excellent.
It's true. And it's interesting because like it definitely took me a while to realize like how different our family was, you know, you don't just that, you know, I grew up with that. That's just what I knew, what I was used to.
Mm.
But, you know, just as I got older, I realized like how, you know, special it was, how different our family was.
Yeah,
and just thinking about, I think family bands are more of a thing of the past, I would say, more of a novelty thing.
The family is more of a thing of the past. I mean, as sad as that is, but yeah.
Yeah, and typically when I think of family band, I think, you know, mom, dad, and then like maybe the little kids as well. You know, and we did, you know, the first gig we had was in 2007. I was 13, my sister was 11. And so we were kids then, but now, you know, we're grown up. And you just I don't think there's that much of that thing going on these days. You might have sibling bands like Jonas Brothers,
sure,
or you know various siblings, Billie Eilish and her brother like that.
Yeah, I think it speaks to more of a cultural change for sure.
Perhaps, yeah, definitely.
We're all distracted,
and the music we're playing, of course, is you know, very based in musical theater, in jazz, in some classical, some opera that we're doing.
We're doing
a little bit of pop. So it's a big variety, but, you know, we're talking more on the classical side of things. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting for China, they're very strict about what they want. Very strict, of course.
Yes.
So we've submitted our set list and, you know, they've had to approve it.
We
cannot deviate.
The committee has to approve the
set.
Yeah.
We can't deviate from it at all. They have to make sure that all the lyrics are okay,
Damn.
You know, to say and everything.
Right.
Right. Yeah, we cannot, you know, it's going to be the same exact set night to night.
You have to do a cover of like a march from the Glorious Revolution.
There are no requirements, but we actually do want to throw in a Chinese folk song if possible.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, as an encore.
So what, you just hit all the black notes? It's a bit of a, that's a bad joke. But yeah, yeah.
No, so no improv.
Yeah, yeah, right. No improv, right. Rules. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'll definitely have solos and stuff, you know, within the songs, but like, you know.
And those melodies approve? Like, hey, don't play the fucking
right, right, right. Yeah, what if they're like, you know, you can't play that specific lick. You can't play really, that scale. Yeah,
right, right, right. What if you hit on some forbidden scale?
Yeah.
It's going to be a guy like listening to every note. Hey, that note wasn't supposed to play today.
Yeah. You can't play that chord. Wild. Well, you're gonna have a blast though. How's your Chinese?
Well, it's nothing except for my sister and I was about 10. We recorded a commercial, filmed commercial for, I think, the internet, maybe, for a Chinese school.
Oh, wow.
And we had to learn a little bit of Chinese. It was a funny scene where we were talking to our mom in Chinese, and the dad couldn't understand us. And we were saying, you know, he looks like a big cow or something like that.
Fun.
You know, at the dinner table. And other than that, though, I don't know any Chinese.
The one semester of Chinese I got at the University of Minnesota is completely lost on me now, except for xie xie. And you can say wuhanhao.
Uh-huh.
You could ask somebody, how are they? You say, mm-hmm. I think it's habuhama. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite word in Chinese is, and I'm going to put anybody who speaks Chinese is just rolling their eyes right now. But I think it's longxia, and that means dragon shrimp. Oh. And that is a type of food. What do you think dragon shrimp is?
It feels like it's something I want to eat.
Yeah, you're right. It's a
big
it's
shrimp.
No, it's a lobster.
Oh, lobster. There you go.
Dragon shrimp. Anyway,
well, exactly.
Maybe we'll have that in China. I'm really interested to see what the food's going to be.
Yeah,
well, because I've heard Chinese food, like in China, it can be pretty adventurous.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not sure how much of a choice we'll get.
Yeah.
We're going to be mostly in bigger cities because we're only playing in concert halls, right?
Right.
So I guess typically in bigger cities, we'll have a nice variety. But
we're only playing in concert halls in China.
right.
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting is that, like, we're playing in 20 cities, and most of them I don't know of, right? Because, you know, I just know the big ones, Beijing, Shanghai, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We're going to Shanghai, but we're not even going to Beijing. But I imagine that all these cities are going to be fairly big. China's so big, and they must have so many cities that are big that we haven't heard of most of them. But they're still going to be pretty big compared to U.S. cities.
I'd really be interested in having you back on the podcast after that tour to have a deconstruction.
I would love
if you want to come back on,
I would.
Yeah, well, after all of this, you know.
I'm following all the posts this guy put on Instagram, and it's always hilarious when he's playing. So I'm definitely waiting to see what's going on there.
Yeah. So I'm planning to share as much as possible, assuming that I get a VPN that works.
Aha.
Right.
Because,
you know.
Do they let...
Well,
Instagram through? No, of course not.
No, that's why you need the VPN.
Right.
Yeah.
So what, a VPN on your...
on the phone.
On the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Really try to be careful.
Right.
Yeah. You hear crazy stories. I think you're an artist and you'll be over there as an artist. And I'm sure you have papers and things.
But, hopefully.
That's going to be... When would you set the VPN up? Well, you know what? Maybe we don't need to talk too much about that.
That seems
that's
too technical
interesting.
For this
Right.
I'm not sure.
I'm very fascinated in how people get around it. I mean,
I've talked to people who've done it. That's all I know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's very big in the UK too, because there's a lot of content here that they want to get access to, but it's blocked out because of the market.
Right.
So I know a lot of people who have VPNs.
So basically, you can play any kind of music, right?
Yeah, and that's especially over the last year. One of the things I've really loved is my musical just direction has just totally expanded in every direction. So I would say that basically from the high school, or at least the second half of high school through college, through most of college, I was really focused on jazz. Before that, I was into rock music, writing rock songs and stuff like that. But I would say, I thought of myself as a jazz musician and still do. But there was a period of time, actually, starting from my late my senior year of college through the 2 years after college, where I was really focused, actually, on writing musical theater. And, my jazz background definitely helped a lot for that just because I was familiar with, you know, form. And in because jazz and musical theater have a very, you know, intertwined history. You know, a lot of the jazz standards come from Broadway shows. So I was very prepared to write at least the basic musical theater songs. And my first experience writing musical theater was at Columbia with the Varsity Show, which is this annual musical that goes back to the late 19th century and has had writers such as Rodgers and Hart, Oscar Hammerstein, more recently Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkey, all guys who've gone on for Broadway.
You're speaking Chinese to me right now.
Careers. No problem. Just big guys in Broadway.
In Broadway, yeah. Sure.
No, so it's a sure huge lineage, and it was awesome. It was an awesome experience. It was basically we were writing a show in 3 months, you know, writing it, rehearsing it at the same time, revising it, orchestrating it. It was a crazy process, but it was intense and it was fun. And that basically propelled me to work on musical theater for 2 years. I was in the BMI Musical Theater Workshop, which actually my dad was in decades ago in L.A.
Right.
With actually the founder of the workshop. His name is Lehman Engel. But I did it here in New York. And that was great. I got to meet and write with a lot of other musical theater writers. But basically, about a year ago, I realized I wanted to get back to more performing. And that was something that had taken a backseat to composing.
What was the play, the musical at Columbia about? The
sure,
Varsity
yeah.
Show?
So the Varsity Show is always...
it's like a showcase?
No, it's a musical. It's a full-length musical, at least in recent history. I would say like the last, 20 years or so, it's been a show, like a, you know, a full-length show. And it's always it has something to do with Columbia, or it's based around the events that happened at Columbia or something like that. But our show was fun. It involved King George II, which was the founder of King's College, which later became Columbia after the Revolution. He and his cronies, which were founding fathers who had gone to Columbia, such as Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and Livingston, I forgot his first name, they're all like kind of like these stuck up guys from the 18th century who have been like looking at Columbia, you know, seeing all the mess that's happened.
Yeah, what's wrong?
So King George II comes down to Columbia to fix the school.
Oh,
and so basically
kind of meta.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, so it was drawing on some Trump stuff, and this was before he got elected.
Oh no.
And it was a really fun show. You know, and also Hamilton, of course, was super popular and still is, of course. But, you know, it had just come out.
So
like a couple,
what was your Hamilton like?
Did
he only speak rap? Or?
So our Hamilton wasn't like the main character or anything like that.
Oh,
so,
I got you.
So he was just one of the guys. King George was the main character.
Right.
And it was a really fun show. And you can actually watch that if you want on YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Our show is called it's V-122, Varsity Show number 122, A King's College. That's what it's called. And yeah, that was my first foray into writing music and lyrics for musical theater. And I had such a great time that, you know, it literally was life-changing. Like I totally reevaluated what I thought my trajectory was going to be. Like, you know, before that, you know, at the time before that, you know, I was doing a lot of music stuff, but I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do after college. You know, I wasn't, you know, totally set on what the direction it was, you know, because it's kind of undefined unless you go to, let's say, grad school or something
sure,
like that.
Right.
But well, at that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to just start writing shows and get to Broadway. Like that.
Yeah.
It was huge. And, you know, and I knew that was hard. But I think musical theater is got to be the hardest thing just because it involves so many people and so much money.
Yeah.
At least if we're talking about Broadway. Yes.
Sure.
You know, of course, off Broadway is a great forum as well and other stuff too. But
well, and the dream is to put
the dream
off
is
Broadway. Right. No, but I mean,
Broadway
the dream
to
is,
Broadway,
and then
yeah.
transfer.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
That's always the move.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically my decision to go back to actually to start really giving a big effort into being a, you know, working musician in New York was realizing that, hey, I like writing songs, but what I need to do is write a show, which you'll spend years on with no promise of it going anywhere.
Right.
Right. And at the same time, I had this other thing, namely playing and doing all that stuff that I wanted to get back to
well,
and could you know, that seems like smaller chunks, and I can really actively work at that and see progress, and it's not as much of a risk.
You're a young guy, and I would say there's so much future ahead. So, you know, maybe you'll come back.
I haven't like said goodbye to it. In fact, and you know, all the stuff I've worked on, I think is very valuable. Hmm. But in fact, at my gigs next week, I'm going to be doing an arrangement of two of the songs I wrote while I was writing musical theater.
Oh, cool. Right. It all feeds, everything feeds everything else, doesn't
it? Yeah. And it's great. I found it was really interesting. I really liked writing for character and also writing music to fit lyrics.
Yeah.
Or writing music that would be good for lyrics, because that really focuses your energy on making melodies that are very catchy and singable and interesting forms that arise from that as well. So I think it's very valuable, and I'm really excited to present especially one of these songs that I wrote for an adaptation of the movie Her from a few years ago, if you saw see that one?
Mm-hmm.
And
I never saw it, but I knew.
So,
I need to see it.
It's a song that me and my partner, Henry Nettleton, he's a lyricist and director, we wrote for that scene. Well, you haven't seen it, but it's a scene where Theo, played by Joaquin Phoenix, is basically having sex with his artificially intelligent operating system, Samantha, played by Scarlett Johansson. And so So we wrote a song for that moment, and you know, I'll be doing an arrangement of that.
That's fantastic. Right. I can't wait to see the show. I'm definitely
that particular one. If you really want to see that particular one, is going to be played Tuesday through Thursday, because I basically have two different sets of music.
Right. I'm so I don't know which one to go to. The one with both. You folks. Yeah, right, both.
In fact, actually, more like three different sets of music, because Friday and Saturday are also going to be different from each other, because I have all those guests on Saturday.
I love it.
But any night will be great.
It's Jake's week.
Yeah.
However, if you want to see Glockenspiel, you're going to have to come Friday or Saturday.
Okay.
Because the first three nights, I'll be playing vibraphone, a little marimba, and piano. No Glock, though.
Got it. Yeah. You're leaving the Glock in the trunk.
Yeah, I just there's not enough time to do four instruments really in an hour.
I want to pick your brain a little bit more offline about the musical theater stuff, because I'm a playwright.
I knew that. Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely.
But that's I think we can take that one offline.
Absolutely.
But it's very curious. A little more abstract is a question like, what's it like working with librettists, with the people who are writing the books for the musicals. That's an interesting collaboration, and obviously as a playwright, that's something that I've always sort of been interested in it. But I'd be lying if I said I had a true passion for musical theater.
Right.
That said, it's something that I like well enough, and I know that's it's a bit of a corny thing to say, but I could see myself getting immersed into it at some point.
Sure.
Yeah. But what's that like? So, I mean, you were mentioning, writing melodies for lyrics and all the rest, but, you know.
Yeah. So, to this point, the only full-length musical I've written was the one at Columbia.
Yep.
But, you know, we definitely met with the book writers a lot, but there was also a good amount of separation between music, you know, me and the other composer lyricist, and then the book writers. And we had so little time. So we were just like doing it as we went and just
that's
trying.
It's such a fascinating process to marry crazy process, dramatic structure to songs and the convention
absolutely. And usually, you know, as a songwriter, you want to write songs already knowing exactly what's happening in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Typically that's, you know, I would like to have as much of an outline as I can. Mm-hmm. Even the scene would be awesome, you know, and then you could just take from the scene and put that into song. But a lot of the time we were actually writing songs before we even had the scene.
Mm.
We had an outline. We kind of knew what was happening in the scene, but, you know, and then I guess like they would formulate the book around that. And then, you know, we ended up throwing out a good amount of stuff or rewriting. Sure. So, yeah.
It is actually incredible when musicals really, really work.
Absolutely. It's incredible. I think it's very hard. And I think definitely since I started writing musical theater and seeing more shows, I've become more critical of them, right? Mm. And harder to appease. Not to say that like I go in wanting to be a critic, because I definitely want to enjoy everything I go see.
Sure.
But you're it is really hard to make it work. It is so hard to make to go from speaking to singing and make it believable and not hokey.
Well, and then there's right, the hokey thing is interesting. You have to hit a certain tone and
exactly,
like, kind of wink a little bit. But some shows don't do that at all. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. And if you, structurally, if you can find something where the song, it just where it makes sense at
exactly,
the break.
Yes,
into the song.
And that can be very hard, is to find where the song goes and what exactly the song is about.
Mm.
And just make sure that the song just piggybacks onto the scene
and moves the story forward.
Exactly,
what is the music you like writing the most? When you feel like, where do you get your inspiration from? And does it come from your heart, or whatever you're feeling in the moment? You know, listening to a note.
I think all of that stuff.
All of that together.
You know, just my writing is very. There's so much variation in what I write. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's made up of all the things that I've listened to and played before, you know, so it's hard to say like where it comes from, and but all over,
and all of even like your life experiences, all of that together.
I mean, I would say so. That's more abstract, so I wouldn't be able to exactly explain that concretely, but I'm sure it all factors in, you know. Just last night, I was actually, like I was saying to you earlier, Jose, I was working on a piece that I'm gonna perform at Dizzy's, and it's my newest composition. And yeah, it was just, I got so into it. I must have worked on it for about 6 hours straight.
Yeah.
Wow. And
time traveling.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just one of those things where I couldn't stop working. I had to finish it. And I basically finished it in my head. I started writing it out very early this morning around, I want to say like 4:30 before I couldn't stay awake anymore.
Oh, man.
So, you know.
7 in the morning.
Yeah, I went to bed. I went to sleep close to 7.
Oh, wow. No, I had it in my head that you woke up and had
no,
to
no, 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 no.
You were up,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
But
the thing is,
I got to talk to your pharmacist.
The thing is, that isn't that much later than I've been staying up the last like 3 weeks or so. I've been on a nocturnal schedule where I've been pretty much going to sleep at 6 and waking up at 2.
Wow.
Although I woke up without an alarm today before noon. It's really weird.
Hey.
I didn't know why.
All right.
And that's not typical for me.
You were excited to podcast.
I think that's what it was. I've been on this crazy nocturnal schedule because I haven't had to, one, I haven't had to get up for anything in the morning. And I just have, I guess I work well at night, you know, when things are quiet. You know, and we live in a quiet neighborhood.
It's my question goes also
because I don't know. I love music too. So, and I played guitar for a long time, many years ago. But what I love lately is that freedom. I just grind my guitar sometimes and do whatever, you know, just for my own fun. I'm not a musician like you are, and I left that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always there. But my thing is like, what is the music that you're like creating in that moment when you feel like so connected and free, and you don't have any, let's say, any responsibilities with anybody to, I need to give this to this guy because he, you know, musical theater writing or anything. What makes you feel like so free and connected?
Yeah. You mean in my composition? Well, it depends. In my writing, you know, it can just be, you know, if my mind is clear and I can just focus on this piece that I'm writing, it can be that, you know. Typically, it's something I'm really excited about. You know, whether it might be on the vibes. For instance, like a year ago, I was having a lot of fun writing these short little grooves, these little pieces for Instagram. So they were minute long, and they're called Chappie's Groove. That's the series, Chappie's Groove.
Yeah, nice.
And it was a series that I started basically for Instagram, and have since arranged them for different groups. And I'll be presenting 3 of them at Dizzy's for the quartet. So I'm excited about that. And then more often than composing, though, I think is playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all the time, and I would say typically it's typically it's not every time I play, but there are moments when just the band is having a great time, the audience is having a good time, and really I can just let loose and I'm not really worrying about anything, and I can really just focus in on the moment and have fun. And when I'm loose like that, that's really when the best stuff comes out.
Sure.
You know,
sure it is. Yeah. What's that process like when, let's say, you get really loose and something happens and there's an idea that comes up during a set and then it's time to go home? Do you rush home and write it out? Do you does that work?
That actually, I don't know if that's ever happened.
Okay, maybe I'm assuming about your process.
Yeah, because when I'm typically, you know, when I'm performing, I'm not composing a new song, right? I mean, of course, I might be soloing and you know, composing mm-hmm. in that sense.
Sure, sure.
Know, spontaneous composition. Gotcha. But no, I mean, there may have been times where, you know, I was inspired by something I played, but I would say in general, my composing happens when I'm out and about, you know, in my head, for instance, or maybe I'm just practicing vibes or piano, and then I stumble upon something.
Where can I find one of the vibraphone tunes online or the Glock Glockenspiel?
Yeah, just go to my Instagram.
Online. Yeah,
you'll find, especially if you search for hashtag Chappie's Groove.
Yeah,
which is I look for hashtags that haven't been used by anyone else,
right?
Because then people can search for those hashtags and just find all the videos that I've posted.
You know what I'll do? I'll do even one better for the podcast, though, is I'll ask you, if you don't mind, to send me an MP3 into a Dropbox, and maybe I could add it to the show.
Yeah.
People could hear it directly. Yeah. Like, absolutely, there we go. You know, go to what? So hashtag Chappie's.
Hashtag Chappie's Groove. Would give you all the Chappie's Grooves.
Cool.
For Glockenspiel things, you would have to just go to my Instagram page and find where I'm playing the Glockenspiel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just look for me playing a mini vibraphone or, like, you know, a tiny little bells or xylophone thing.
Oh, but I'd be remiss not to ask, though. You know, so I'll get that from you after the show, and I can weave it in during post so people can hear your music.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
I've had fun with my Instagram. That's something that, honestly, wasn't very active on social media until early last year. Or mid last year, something like that. Instagram, I always thought was something, hey, I have Facebook, why do I need to post more photos and, I guess, videos somewhere else?
Mm.
But then I don't even know, like, what gave me the idea, but I just was like, let me give this a shot. And that was sort of happening at the same time where I was thinking, okay, I want to start promoting myself a little more and start building some sort of presence online. And obviously, it's such a great tool for musicians and any other, anyone else that runs a business or is a creative.
I mean, it sounds like it's working out for you. That's fun.
Yeah.
I want to check all these things out after the show for sure.
Yeah,
for
definitely.
Sure. Yeah,
definitely.
It's good stuff. We covered a lot of ground already. I want to go back to your family and your background in LA and your trajectory to get to where you are now. So you know, like,
so I went I came here for school, for college at Columbia.
What's for music?
Well, I didn't know that I was going to study music when I came here. No, it was just it was just that I went to it was a byproduct of me going to a very well-known and one of the top private schools in the country called Harvard Westlake in Studio City. And it's a very academically rigorous environment. And I think that motivated me gave me the idea to want to go to, you know, a top school.
Sure.
And, you know, I was very focused on school.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I would – one sec. Water break.
Yeah, right.
In the meantime.
Yeah, in the meantime. Yeah.
So I was pretty focused on school. In addition to my music and also acting, I was a big actor for theater at school. So I decided to go to Columbia. I got an early decision, so it made my life easy. Didn't have to do a lot of applications. And I knew that there was a good jazz program there, you know, for a for an Ivy League liberal arts college. Right. What a hard word to say.
It is, yeah. Well, it's increasingly difficult to cope with having a liberal arts degree.
Yeah.
It's like calling Dr. Freud.
Yeah.
No, it's all
so, good. You know, I studied a variety of things, but, you know, that included music and some computer science as well.
Oh, wow.
But I also was fortunate enough to be in the Columbia Juilliard Exchange, which allowed me to have lessons and be in an ensemble at Juilliard. I went there twice a week for a couple of years, performed at Juilliard and throughout the city, like Blue Note and Dizzy's.
It's great. So, it sounds like you kind of knew what you wanted and made it happen.
Yeah, I basically made the most pretty much of out of what I could do during the 4 years.
Yeah.
One thing I will say that I wasn't doing during school, and probably just because I was so busy during school, was really focusing on a career after college, right? Trying to make a lot of connections and go to jam sessions, try to get gigs and all that kind of stuff that I'm trying to do now, you know? And
do you wish you had done a little more of that?
I mean, yeah. I definitely would have said just during college, if I could have been a little more social, both on campus and off campus, in terms of meeting, you know, future collaborators and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think that's an uncommon experience.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I share that
either.
All the way through grad school, having regrets about the way I handled certain
exactly.
things.
Exactly. And, you know, I was extremely academically focused in college for whatever reason, you know, more concerned about grades than I was in high school. For some reason, I feel like it's usually the opposite, unless like you really know you want to go to med school or law school or something like that. But like I didn't really have any, you know, plans to go to grad school after. So I didn't know why exactly, other than just like personal motivation to do as good as I could.
So what degree did you get?
A BA.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I have a major in music. I have a concentration in computer science.
Oh, interesting. And so you went in. That's an interesting comment.
Yeah, I didn't do any computer science before I got to Columbia and took a class my second year.
Hmm.
And then music, I didn't plan to study music there, but I started in the music theory sequence, and I really liked my teacher, and it kind of just went from there.
You're not the only person who has that interesting connection between music and math.
Yeah. It's pretty common, actually. Mm. Yeah. And also, there were a lot of people that did the music computer science combo as well.
Hmm.
That wasn't uncommon. You know, there's a lot of math involved in music, a lot of patterns, a lot of logic, a lot of recurring things.
And there's a lot of feeling in computer science. And computer science, when you really take it on the road, it'll pick up roadies. And, you know, a lot has changed. I mean, you know, it's pretty good to be a computer scientist these days.
I do absolutely zero with computer science. That wasn't, some people will say, oh, that was your fallback, you know.
Sure.
But that was absolutely not. It was just something that I got into.
Yeah.
Took a few classes.
Are you a chess player? You play chess?
I do not even know how to play chess.
Oh, okay.
I know like some of the moves, but I honestly do not know everything.
Well, that's somebody I can beat. You know?
Right? Yeah. I'll set you guys a game up after this.
I would like to learn exactly how to play a game.
Yeah, maybe we could.
But I've never played a full game.
Could do
one
sometime. Yeah. The horsey moves in an L shape.
No, I know that. Yeah. I know some of how they move, but I don't know all of them.
Yeah.
But I do know the knight goes in an L. Yeah, two and one. Yeah.
It's the horsey.
Horse,
and you want a castle early. Those are two good pieces of advice. Castle.
I want to play like in Harry Potter with a huge one. Now that would be awesome. Yeah.
We're Hogwarts. On our way. Well, by the way, Jake and me happen to be neighbors. We live in the same building, and every time, you know, I was passing by, I was listening to, oh wow, look at this guy playing. And then we finally met. Well, through my girlfriend, all of that. But you know, we met a couple of times. Pretty cool. Pretty cool dude. Also, my girlfriend took a picture of him. I'm going to say
Yes.
An amazing fucking picture.
Yeah.
And that picture is going to be included in this show, in the show notes at getthispodcast.com, which is a website I also built. I did not study computer science at Columbia, but you can find that image there, and we'll credit your girlfriend, Manziki, with that picture, because the pictures are awesome. I was actually there when you were doing that photo shoot.
Yeah, that's right. That's when I actually met you.
Yeah, that's where we met. Yeah, I had come along to get some headshots of my own. And that'll be great, man, to have. So great. Yeah. She's such a talented photographer. There's so many talented, artistic people up here in this neighborhood.
That's what I was going to say. And actually, mentioning that, it's like the neighborhood is full of talented people around. But you always see like people walking with instruments and stuff, and I don't know, it's pretty cool. But everywhere you go in a bar, and like you try to feel like, oh, I'm the only one that knows about acting. No, like everybody, like the guy in the kitchen come out and tell you something
got,
about
it. Right, he's got his his headshot. He wants to talk to you. That's funny. It's like every Uber driver in LA has a script. They're ready to
exactly.
Hand you a script. It's a great neighborhood for sure.
So, on our way here, we were also talking, and this is something that I've seen Jake even walking on the snow with his vibraphone. And then it's like one of those instruments, like if I ever get to be passionate about an instrument again, I probably pick up a ukulele, you know, something that I can just put in my pocket and travel.
Exactly.
But I've seen this guy through the snow, rain and shine. Nothing stopped this guy moving that thing.
Yeah, definitely through the rain. Luckily, I think it snowed like 6 times this winter. There was so little of it. And that was great that I didn't, because how I get around is I don't have a car. Which is what most people would have when they have some big instrument.
But but then you're driving around New York City and all the rest. Oof.
But I'm not driving though because I put it on a cart and I take it on the subway, and that is something you will very very rarely see. You might see drummers on the train, you see bass players, but vibes players, it's very rare. So like I have this thing, with the cart, it's got to be 130, 140 pounds. And so we're talking, I leave my place at 190th, I go up the hill on Fort Washington all the way to 177th where the elevator is, take that down to get on the A train. Luckily, we live close to the end of the line. So
couldn't you get on at 190?
So I could, but there's stairs.
Ah, right. Of course, you're
so
right.
So I've gone down those stairs before, but it's kind of a pain.
It gets a little dicey.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
You're right. I had
for the elevator.
Yeah. Wow.
And yeah, so that's
getting a little inside neighborhood baseball here, but I know. It's interesting, man. But this is dovetail into the question I was going to ask, which is maybe a little more broad, and you can finish the story. But it's what is it like to be a young working musician in New York City?
Yeah, New York is just totally packed with musicians. There's never a shortage of musicians. There's just so many people to meet, so many people I don't know yet. And there's so many things going on. So I've just been trying to play as much music as possible in as many different scenes as I can get into. I'm so motivated, I guess, that I will bring a vibraphone or any other instrument that people typically wouldn't bring to something like a jam session. Not just a gig where I'm being paid, but I've brought it to jams in Brooklyn, for instance.
Yeah.
Where it actually set a record, my personal record for amount of time it took me to get home and number of trains it took, which was
it
six trains, and it took two and a half hours, I think.
Oh. Wow. Where was the gig? Was it in Greenpoint?
That was a jam session in Bushwick.
Oh, in Bushwick.
At Artichoke Pizza. Fantastic jam.
I know that place.
My friend Zavin hosts every Saturday pretty much late, like 11:30 to 3:30, 4 in the morning. Hip hop, freestyle rap. It's really fun. And I've brought vibraphone to that and glockenspiel as well. I'm going all over these places for gigs, for jam sessions, for some recording sometimes. And, I've taken one cab, and that was because my cart broke.
Sure.
And it was raining.
Right.
So.
And those prices have gone up.
Exactly.
And up
especially where we live,
forget it.
And I need an Uber XL.
Yeah.
So we're talking over $100 to do anything.
Sure.
Right? And so actually this traveling stuff started late last spring when I started busking, especially in Washington Square. I'd be going down a lot during last summer when I was, had to start building up my just network and also just start being out there playing, because, I didn't have many gigs. I just wanted, I had an itching to perform for anyone who would hear, and ended up meeting a lot of people that way and just connecting with a lot of people, building my audience is great. Combine that with an online presence.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And the whole world is your audience at any time.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah, you're making all these great connections. You're really getting out there. And it shows so much commitment, too. I mean, with Jose and his ukulele, I mean, that's nothing.
Somewhere
over the A train.
So a working musician in New York. Yeah, just, you know, it's a slow process because there is so much competition, and you know, there's so many people that it's just hard to, you know, to get in so fast. You know, smaller cities, you might be able to meet a good amount of the population,
sure, you
know, fairly fast.
I think there are probably different scenes too.
Different scenes, and yeah, absolutely, right.
But I imagine you come in, you show you have chops, and you can handle yourself and behave.
It's just a matter of time.
Right.
You know, the more you play, the more people you play with, it just kind of, you know, blossoms from there.
Yeah.
And you know, there's definitely progress that I've seen. You know, just measuring by the, let's say, the amount of performances that I've been able to do, or the amount of people that want to play. Even this gig at Dizzy's, it's a good, I'd say, milestone for me, because it's a pretty big, week that I have as a leader. You know,
yeah,
the opportunity to perform
amazing
at one of the premier jazz clubs in New York.
How do you land that?
Kind of just the process started over a year ago, emailing, and I don't know. It just kind of I don't know exactly the details.
Reached out and kept working at it. And,
yeah, you know, just, you know, didn't think too hard about it, but just one day I got asked to do it, and of course I wanted to do it.
So. I got to ask you a serious jazz question.
Sure.
Are Jose and I Hepcats or?
Cats?
Are we Hepcats, or like what's the new jazz slang?
I don't know.
Like, are we Hep?
Okay. Hip?
Oh, we're Hep. Hip. Oh, we're Hip.
Hip.
We're Hip now. Okay.
Hip. Yeah.
I thought you'd really
what's
come
Hep?
In. Hep. They used to hep? Say that, like, oh, he was a real Hep cat.
I think you mean Hip. Maybe.
Yeah. No,
maybe
I know, were, but maybe, I, but,
oh,
I, but I think
you say, in
I think
a certain
say,
way.
I think if you say, well, he's a real Hip cat, you know, I think you gotta be, yeah, he's a Hep cat.
I mean. You guys are Hip cats
in
general. Yeah, for
oh,
sure.
That's okay. Cool.
Right.
Maybe I was fishing a little bit. But
you gotta say that to the casting directors. They're looking for hipsters in Brooklyn.
I'm a real Hip cat.
You guys think I'm a hipster.
For sure. Hip.
I think when
I'm a Hip cat.
But you know, there is all this like cool stuff around jazz, right? Like Lenny Bruce and all of this stuff. And I mean, you know, he used to speak in that kind of jazz patter. Or like there's a certain sort of slang and lingo that you would sort of associate with it.
Absolutely, yeah.
What did you think of Whiplash?
Whiplash, I enjoyed, and I know a lot of jazz musicians. And actually, I didn't see it right away. I actually saw it about 2 years ago, but I really enjoyed it. And a lot of my jazz musician friends, you know, said, you know, it was over the top. It wasn't really reflective of actual, you know, jazz or conservatory life or anything like that. But that wasn't the point of the movie. I think if you made a movie about, you know, a college jazz band and it was, you know, really accurate and tried to be totally what it was, it would be boring, right?
Well,
I mean, jazz school is pretty boring, like in jazz band. There's not, you know, it's not really exciting when you're in rehearsal. So, you know, they had to make it larger than life in some way. I think they went a little too far with the car crash. I think that scene was just a little over the top. But in general, it was a very entertaining movie.
Yes.
And I think it took the concept of jazz and the competition around, you know, big band jazz and jazz school and was able to make a compelling story out of it.
I agree.
I mean, I was feeling the struggling of this guy practicing and practicing and practicing for hours and, you know, being right with the timing. I found it very fascinating.
I have
seen teachers like that, not exactly like that, but, you know.
And actually, I've seen, so you might know Adam Neely. He's a blogger, vlogger on YouTube, talks about like music related things. He did an episode reviewing that movie and he also said, you know, I like the movie, but, you know, here are the things that I got wrong about jazz and jazz school. And basically the thing he said was it's a sports movie, which is very true.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah. And it has the structure of like the Mighty Ducks.
Exactly. Yeah. It's about, you know, just like the grit and the competition and, you know, adversity.
Rocky.
And like, you know, like just
brute. It's just a sports movie.
Conflict and practice and all this stuff.
You're not looking for realism out of
No. And most of the people that watch that movie have, you know, they don't know what jazz school's like. They don't really care.
Right. But yeah, I think you relate to it if you've ever had that ambitious young person in your heart. And everybody has that somewhere.
Sure.
It's a very relatable
film. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact,
that performance was incredible from both.
Yes.
Both the performances were amazing.
Really great. Yeah. I really like the movie.
Yeah.
In fact, I will say that Adam Neely video, which I mentioned, I am in it.
Oh.
He went to Washington Square Park to watch the video on his phone. And